Radha Krishna Param Sagarabhavi Tashi Vishakam Vitamscha Vanchakalpati Vishcha Kipasinda Vyavata Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavavya Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
It's May 4th, 2022. Internet class from Hilo, Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4. Chapter 31, Narada instructs the Prachetas, text 7. Tanna pradyota yadyatma. Jnanam tat varta darshanam. Yenanjasa tarisyamo. Dustaram Bhava Sagaram. Please chant. Tat. Therefore.
Therefore.
Naha.
Na.
For us.
Na.
For us.
Pradyotaya.
Kindly awaken.
Adhyatma.
Adhyatma.
Transcendental.
Transcendental.
Jnanam.
Jnanam.
Knowledge.
Knowledge.
Tattva.
Tattva.
Absolute truth.
Absolute truth.
Artha.
Artha.
For the purpose of.
Darshanam.
Darshanam.
Philosophy.
Philosophy.
Yena.
Yena.
By which.
By which.
Anjasa.
Anjasa.
Easily.
Easily.
Tarishyamaha.
Tarishyamaha.
We can cross over.
We can cross over.
Dustaram.
Dushtaram.
Formidable.
Formidable.
Bhavasagaram.
Bhavasagaram.
The ocean of nations.
The ocean of nations.
Muted. Unmuted.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. Dear Master, kindly enlighten us in transcendental knowledge, which may act as a torchlight by which we may cross the dark nations of material existence. One sec. Okay, Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Prachetas requested Narada to enlighten them in transcendental knowledge, which may act as a torchlight by which... The Prachetas requested Narada to enlighten them in transcendental knowledge. Generally, when a common man meets a saintly person, he wishes to get some material benediction. However, the Prachetas were not interested in material benefit, for they had enjoyed all this sufficiently. Nor did they want the fulfillment of their material desires. They were simply interested in crossing the ocean of nations. Everyone should be interested in getting out of the material clutches. Everyone should approach a saintly person in order to be enlightened in this connection. One should not bother a saintly person to get blessings from material enjoyment. Generally, householders receive saintly persons to get their blessings, but their real aim is to become happy in the material world. Asking such material benedictions is not recommended in the Shastras. Tanna prayota yad yatma jnanam tat varta darshanam. Yen anjasa tarishyamo dustaram bhavasagaram. Dear Master, kindly enlighten us in transcendental knowledge, which may act as a torchlight by which we may cross the dark nations of material existence. So here Srila Prabhupada is talking about blessings and benedictions that people go to a saintly person to get a benediction or to get a blessing. and what blessing we should ask for, and what blessing we should not ask for. So we might first of all ask, why does anyone seek blessings and benedictions at all? You know, where does that come from? You know, all of us would like to be happy. We all want to, you could say, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. We all want to have a healthy life. We want to live a long, healthy life. We want to have happiness, which materially, of course, we identify as a comfortable situation for our body, pleasant people for our mind and our emotions. And we want knowledge. We want to be able to understand things. Right? This is natural. But why ask for blessings or benedictions for it? You know, why not just work for it? So the problem is that, as we see, that if we try to work for material happiness, if we try to get material happiness, we try to get eternity, knowledge, and bliss simply by our good works, it doesn't always work. Yes? So why is that? Well, first of all, we don't necessarily get the results of good karma immediately. Just like yesterday, followers of the Vedas, they consider it a good day to give charity. It's a good day to start things, Akshaya Tritiya. And so people give charity, and a lot of them are giving charity with the idea that that will benefit them, that they'll give in charity and they'll get the money back. But they may not get the money back until next life. Right? So that's one thing, is that it may be delayed. Another thing is that if you make a mistake, then you may not get the result you want. Just like King Riga gave all this charity, but he made a mistake, and so he didn't get the result that he wanted. And so karma is very intricate and somewhat confusing. Right? We see that good people may be suffering in this life, bad people may be enjoying in this life, and, you know, it's such a complicated, intricate system, this karmic system, that people don't want to be dependent only on that. Another thing is, to get good karma, you have to work hard. You know, you have to do some austerity. You have to make some effort. Giving charity means you're giving away some money that you want to use for yourself, with the hope that you're making an investment and you're going to reap the results of your investment. But in the meantime, you have to give away money that you might rather spend on something else for yourself. So it requires some sort of austerity, doing good for others, right? Having some selflessness. And, you know, it's work to do good karma. Karma means activity, it's work. So people want blessings and benedictions because they might want something immediate. Srila Prabhupada talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita, that people go to the demigods. Why do we say out of lust? Why does Krishna say out of lust? He said they want something undue, that's not due to them, unearned. They want something unearned. Prabhupada compares it to a bribe, right? That by what you've earned, you're at spot number 25, and you want to bribe someone to bring you up to spot number 1. Every once in a while, there's something in the news about with organ donation, you know, where somebody does something illegal in order to have themselves or their relative bumped up on the organ donation list. Or, you know, if you're applying for anything from the government in India, I have some friends who were applying for something from the government in India, and it's the kind of thing in America you get in 3 months, and in India it takes you about 5 years. And so they're saying, well, maybe I should bribe someone to bump us up on the list. So that's wanting to get a benediction. You know, you want to, or students who bribe their teachers, or, you know. And this is very common. Like in people getting a job, they often say it's not just what you know, it's who you know. So just on the basis of your resume, maybe you won't be able to get a job. But, you know, if your uncle knows somebody who knows somebody, then you can get the job. You can get a blessing. You can get a benediction. So it's a kind of runaround, a kind of workaround, a shortcut where you don't have to do all the good karma, and you don't have to worry about maybe making a mistake in your karma, and you don't have to wait for the results of your karma. You can just get it now. You know, if you go to the person who's the controller, you go to the person who's the manager. And so people understand that the universe is run by the Lord's representatives. That in one sense, the Lord is running everything directly, and in another sense, he's not. In another sense, he's aloof, and he's running the universe through his various representatives, the different demigods, and also the saintly persons. So people understand, if they're pious, they understand that there's a God, and then they understand that saintly persons have the ear of God. There's one place where Prabhupada said that the pure devotees are holding Krishna in the palm of their hand. So they figure, well, they'll have an in. You know, they'll have a way to circumvent the normal system. And in fact, that does work. You know, it is a fact that if you go to the demigods or you go to the saintly persons, that they can circumvent the normal system, just like this is true in our ordinary life. You know, we have some problem with a company, and we go to the supervisor, or we go to the supervisor's supervisor, and we make our case, and if they're willing, then the normal rules can be circumvented. And, you know, maybe we'll get a refund on something that's past the date for turning in a refund, or whatever. You know, we'll get a good seat on the plane that we haven't paid for. So this is why people are looking for blessings normally in this world. They're, you know, they understand it's a way to what we call game the system. And it's true. It's real. So if one of the demigods gives you a benediction, you can get something which is normally not due you by your karma. Again, this works generally in the world. Also, it works in the, and it's even built into the world. I mean, sometimes the demigods get into trouble with this. Like the Lord gives some rebuke to Lord Brahma. He says, you know, stop giving these demons these benedictions. It's simply causing trouble for everybody. So every once in a while, the demigods get into trouble with doing this. Lord Shiva, who gave his benediction to Vrikasura, that anyone whose head he's touched would crack, you know, and it ended up being a problem that Lord Vishnu then had to solve. So that happens in the world too. You know, some middle manager may give out some kind of benediction, and the supervisor says, hey, wait a minute, you know, you gave out too many things that you shouldn't have given out. But generally, it's kind of built into the system that the supervisors have the discretion to give people things that are not within the normal rules. It is within the rules that the supervisors can do things that are outside the normal rules. And this is true, it's baked into the criminal system. So a person is sentenced to jail, and sometimes they're sentenced without possibility of parole, but most criminals have the possibility of getting out of jail early. So that's dependent on their good works in jail, but it's also dependent primarily on the blessings of the parole board. So the parole board has to decide, yes, you can get out of jail early. And of course, it's conditional. When they're let out of jail early, they have a parole officer who's keeping up with them, and if they mess up, they go back to jail. But the point is, there's something built into the system that if you have a 25-year sentence, you might only serve 10 years of it because you might get out due to parole. So people who are incarcerated are very much seeking the blessings or the benediction of the parole board. Or also a person can get out early if they get the blessings of the governor of the state or the president of the country. And in the United States, it's almost a tradition that before a president leaves office, they go through a list of criminals who've requested pardon. And a pardon means it was as if you never committed a crime. You don't have any of the... They can do two things. They can pardon criminals or they can commute their sentences. So commute their sentences means they let them out early, but they're still considered guilty of a crime. To pardon them is as if they never committed a crime in the first place. And so I'm not sure how long this goes back historically, but for quite some time, United States presidents will pardon and commute the sentences of people right before they leave office. And you have to request this, or somebody has to request it. Somebody has to say, you know, please, please pardon my sentence, and this is the reason I should be pardoned, and so forth. So that's the main reason that people ask for blessings and benedictions, and this is the main reason why people go to a saintly person, is that, you know, you have the arta artati, the people who want material benedictions from God and who want to get rid of their suffering. And this is extremely common. And even if we might think we're not doing this overtly, we may be doing this without so much being honest about it. And one way we know that we're approaching the Lord or approaching the great devotees for a material benediction is how we respond if our material life has problems after following the instructions of a saintly person. Then this is quite common. So I can think of one person, but I actually know many, but I'm thinking of one in particular who's, you know, stopped chanting his rounds and stopped following the process because his material life fell apart, even though, you know, he was following everything. So he had never broken the regulative principles in his life, and he had taken initiation, and he was a very good, upright person and a good devotee. But then there were difficulties in his life that were not, at least obviously, his fault in this life, and his life kind of fell apart. And he said, what is the use of being Krishna conscious? If I'm Krishna conscious, then simply, you know, my life goes just as badly as anybody else's life. And this is how we know that this is, that the material benedictions are what we're looking for, is again, how do we respond when our life doesn't go well? And I remember, I'd been in the Hare Krishna movement maybe a couple years, and I was going through a time of being quite ill. And I was also in a very difficult situation. I was literally living in a closet, and the temple that we were in was very, very poor. The prasadam was not adequate nutritionally. You know, as I said, I was quite ill, and my whole situation was very difficult. And I remember at one point saying to Krishna, you know, I'm doing everything right. I'm doing everything you're asking of me. I'm following all the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. You know, I shouldn't be suffering like this. So when we have that kind of response, we know that no matter how much we think we're coming for transcendental reasons, we're not really. I mean, this is a good indicator. How we respond when things don't go our way is a good indicator of what our real motives are, what our real relationships are. Now, there's another transcendental reason why we need benedictions and blessings. So we've talked about why people seek benedictions and blessings materially, but spiritually, it's absolutely essential. I mean, we could say materially even that karma, good karma, is never absolutely enough. That there are persons who control the universe, and if you don't please those persons, your good karma is insufficient. You know, there's some kindness or benediction or mercy involved, even with getting the results of good karma. I mean, this is a point where Krishna denied this fact in the Govardhan Lila, where he said, you don't need to propitiate Indra. If you're good, Indra has to give you a good result. He's forced to. He has no agency to decide whether or not you get rain according to your personal relationship with him. He has to just follow the rules. But that wasn't absolutely true, because when they made Indra angry, he certainly had the power to cause difficulty for them, even though they had been following all the rules. So even just for the rules of good karma, it's also administered by people.
And of course, those people, the higher demigods and so forth, generally they're supposed to give you whatever you've earned. But, you know, if you really make them angry, they might not. They might say, sorry, I don't want you to have this. And it doesn't mean that the universe is whimsical. There's a good reason for this. So you might have some very wicked or demoniac person who follows all the rules, but you know that if you give them their good karma, they're going to cause havoc with it. Now, generally, if you're wicked and evil and follow the rules, you're going to get your good karmic results anyway. But the demigods do have the ability to make an adjustment, and they can say, you know, we don't want this person to have this position. And what they'll generally do is they'll generally somehow induce the person to do something, to commit some offense against a Vaishnava, or to do something that will knock out their good karma. And they can do the same with somebody who has very good character but somehow doesn't have the good karma. That adjustment is there in the universal level. That adjustment is there on a human level. It's there by the government officials on a human level that can make an ultimate decision and not just following the rules. I remember the first time I went to Ireland. So I would always ask the immigration officers, I would say, can you please put the stamp for my entering the country in a corner of the page so it doesn't take up much room? Because once you run out of pages in your passport, you have to get a new passport, even if your passport hasn't expired. So I always wanted my passport to last until its expiration date, so I would always ask the people at immigration to try to put the stamp in such a way that as many stamps as possible could fit on a page. And the entrance stamp for Ireland is huge. It takes up like half a page in a passport. And so I asked, you know, could you kind of put it out of the way? And the immigration officer looked at me and said, you know, I don't have to stamp your passport at all. I'm not required to let you into the country. So, you know, even though I had all the legal reasons that I could enter into the country, it was ultimately up to the immigration officer. And he did let me in. I mean, I had an instance with going to South Africa from Brazil, where when I first wanted to go to South Africa from Brazil, they stopped me at the boarding gate in Brazil, and they said, do you have a yellow fever vaccine? And I'm like, no, I didn't know I needed one. So then I went, then they said, well, you have to get the vaccine and then wait 10 days. So I went, I got the vaccine, and I waited 10 days, and then I went to South Africa. And the immigration officer in South Africa said, you were supposed to wait in Brazil for 10 days and come on the 11th day, but you've come on the 10th day. She said, I really shouldn't let you into the country. And anyway, she did let me in. But my point is that even in this world, although there's the rules, there are people built into the rules, are the fact that the people who are in charge can still have discrimination. So that's true on a universal level as well. That even if you've done good karma or done bad karma, or as most of us have done, some mix of good and bad karma, it's ultimately up to Yamaraj and the various demigods. Now, when it comes to spirituality, such is also true. In fact, we could say such is even truer, that our ability to advance in spiritual life and our ability to attain a Krishna consciousness is dependent on mercy and grace and benediction and blessings, not just on what we do. And that's even truer than is the case for the laws of karma. Because what we are seeking in reality, our understanding, our Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding of spiritual perfection and enlightenment, is a loving relationship with the personality of Godhead. We do not have an understanding of enlightenment as a mechanical state of beatitude. We don't consider that ultimate enlightenment. But the Shastra says that even for attaining that, even attaining, say, the Brahma Jyoti through the mechanical practice of Astanga Yoga, there needs to be some touch of bhakti. There needs to be some touch of grace. I mean, if that's true for good karma, that there has to be at least some touch of grace of the universal controllers in order to get the result of your good karma. Certainly that would be true also for liberation. There has to be some acquiescence on the part of the Lord even for one to enter into the Brahma Jyoti, even if one has done all of the items of Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, or Dhyan Yoga properly. But we say that that's not the ultimate. That the ultimate is entering into a loving relationship with the Lord. And by definition, a loving relationship is reciprocal. It can't be forced. It's not mechanical. You can't earn a loving relationship by checking off a bunch of boxes or following a particular formula. Now, that doesn't mean that there is no formula. That doesn't mean it's not like where you can just do anything. If you want a loving relationship even with another human in this world, there are certain ways to behave that are likely to result in that, and certain ways to behave that are likely to not result in that. Like Rupa Goswami gives the 6 loving exchanges. So if you want a loving relationship with someone, giving them food and accepting food, and giving them gifts and accepting gifts, and giving confidence and receiving confidences, is much more likely to get you a loving relationship than if you don't do those things. However, doing those things in and of themselves is not sufficient. The other party has to agree. And I'm sure we've all been in such situations, or know of people who've been in such situations, where they apparently did everything right and the other person just simply didn't reciprocate for whatever reason. They just didn't. They're like, I don't particularly want to have a relationship with you, even though you haven't done anything particularly wrong. Yes, I mean, we may feel that way about other people. Some people may want a relationship with us, and we're like, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. It's just, I don't particularly want to. Yeah? So ultimately, my point is, ultimately, it's up to the persons involved, friendship or marriage or any kind of relationship, student and teacher. There has to be a willingness on the part of both parties, which is a kind of blessing. And that blessing is, it's not completely independent of the behavior of the persons involved, not at all. It's very much intertwined with their behavior. At the same time, it's not that the behavior is wholly responsible. I mean, it's interesting. Srila Prabhupada will say apparently opposite things in different places. There's a number of places where he'll say, you know, if you follow this and follow this and follow this, then your Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. In many places he'll say that. You just chant 16 mounts, follow the regulative principles, work for Krishna, you know, your Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. And other places he says, not as often, but other places he says that bhakti is free. You may get it after following everything or you may not get it. It's ultimately in Krishna's hands. It's not a thing that we can demand. I mean, even when we're asking material benedictions for someone in this world, demanding them is likely to have us not get them. You know, the irate customer who's demanding that the supervisor do something, or the, you know, irate student or student's parents who are demanding a good grade from the professor, are likely not to get it. I remember in my doctoral statistics class, so the in-class tests that he gave us were not only difficult, but I would categorize it as unfair because he was testing us on things that he had not taught us. And the majority of the students were failing those tests, including myself. I think those were the only school tests I've ever failed. And I was feeling a lot of anxiety because in the doctoral program I was in, if you failed even one course, you were kicked out of the program entirely. So this left me fully dependent on the take-home exams and the homework, which were also part of the grade. So I sat down and calculated that if I got 100% right on all of the homework and all of the take-home exams, that I would be, I think, 1.5 points under getting an A in that class. So I went to the professor and I said, suppose a student gets such and such total grade for the course. Would it be possible for them to get an A? They're right underneath the A. And he looked at me and he said, what student? You? And I said, yes. And he said, it's possible. So he did end up giving me an A for the course. I got everything right on my take-home exams and everything right on my homework. And even though I failed the in-class exams, he gave me an A. Technically, he should have given me a B if he had just followed the rules. But if I had gone to him irately, you got to give me this, it's not fair, your tests are bad, which they were. If I had done that, there's no way he would have given me an A. He definitely would have given me a B. So one can't do this materially, and one can't do this with the Lord. One can't say, like I did that time, that, I've done everything. I've been going to Mangal Artik on time and chanting my 16 rounds and following the principles and reading Prabhupada's books and eating only prasadam and doing service all day, and why aren't you giving me one? It doesn't work. Then Krishna's going to say, hey, you've really lost the point here. Now, the devotees also know that more effective than going to Krishna is going to Krishna's devotees. Because if we're honest, if we're introspective and we're honest, we'll know that our efforts are always going to fall short. And Rupa Goswami has a prayer like that, which Bhaktivinoda includes in his deity worship manual at the end of Bhajana Rahasya. It goes, Aham apya pradhanam alias twakta sadhana agachistatato nato bhavanto mega paragitihi. O your lordships, I am certainly the abode of many offenses, and I am completely devoid of any devotional practice. I don't have any other shelter, therefore I regard you as my ultimate goal. So Rupa Goswami himself is saying, I am the abode of offenses, and it's interesting to me that he says, I am completely devoid of any devotional practice. So on a technical level, certainly that's not true. On a technical level, Rupa Goswami was doing a lot of devotional practice, but he felt it wasn't very devotional, and we may feel like that. Well, I chanted 16 rounds, but how attentive was I, and was I really free of the offenses, and so forth. And so he's saying, I'm begging you anyway, even though I'm not qualified, to please accept me. But we know that Krishna may be reticent. In fact, Rupa Goswami makes this point in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that devotional service is rarely achieved. And Krishna says this, of course, himself. Manushyanam sahasresu kashchidyadati siddhaya yatatamapi siddhanam kashchidmam beti tatvitaha. And the answer is because when one achieves pure devotional service, one controls Krishna. This is with any of us. How many people do we develop intimate friendships with and allow to, stay in our house overnight? we're careful because somebody could rob us, they could hurt us, whatever. So Krishna is also careful. But if he gets a recommendation from his devotee, then he's much more likely to consider it. Yasya prasadam, bhagavat prasadam, yasya prasadam, nagati katopi. So on the path of bhakti, actually on any other path of yoga, one can understand that if the saintly persons, if the great devotees, if those who are already in Krishna's inner circle give us this blessing, give us this benediction, then even though there's always an insufficiency in our own practice, and always an insufficiency, there always will be. We can never say our practice, our devotion is perfect. It's impeccable. If Rupa Goswami thinks his isn't perfect, forget about us. It's not going to happen. But that the devotee's blessing, the devotee's benediction, will soften Krishna's heart. And Krishna will say, all right, if you're recommending them, then that's okay. Now, Prabhupada's making the point here in the purport that one should know that this is the benediction to ask for. So most of us understand that we need blessings and benedictions in life, even if we're materialistic. And then the question should arise, well, if I need blessings and benedictions, I can't just rely on my own activities and my own character. Then one may ask the question, Well, who is the best person to get benedictions from, and what is the best benediction to ask? So the answer is the best person to ask is a pure devotee. Obviously, one should ask a representative of God, but one should ask the higher a person is, the purer they are in serving the Lord, the more likely one is to get what one wants. Again, even materially, that's true. You know, you're talking to the bottom level person and you ask to speak to a supervisor, then you can ask to speak to their supervisor. But the other thing is what to ask for. You know, when we ask for blessings for this life and this body and this world, they're temporary. This is why Krishna says those who go to the demigods to ask for material benedictions, they're not very intelligent. And the saintly persons feel exasperated with people asking for these benedictions. You know, it's just like, this is not the best thing I have to give you. Why are you asking for this? Why aren't you asking me for the best thing? You know, if you went to some very, Prabhupada gives this analogy, if you go to some very wealthy and powerful person in this world, and that person says, I'll give you whatever you want, and you say, well, I want a handful of rice. Or foolish Kaikeyi, you know, Dasarath, he says, I'll give you whatever you want. And she says, you know, can you banish Ram? It's foolish. Or Prabhupada gives the example of the woman who made her living by collecting sticks for firewood. We'd see a lot of women doing this in Govardhan. And they would collect this firewood, mostly thorny wood, and they would carry it on their head so that she dropped the wood. And then, God, help me, help me. What do you want? I just want to put the wood back on my head. Or Prabhupada tells the story of the man whose job was to pull a boat full of goods from one place to another. So he would stay at the shallow end of the river and he'd walk on the ground under the water, and he'd be pulling this boat in the water. And a very rich man, you know, said to him, I'd be happy to help you out. And he said, oh, please line the bank of the river with mattresses so it won't hurt my feet to walk on the rocks. It would have been more sense to ask for some good water shoes, I suppose. But if you're really going to ask a rich person for anything, then you ask them to make it so you don't have to do that work anymore. You know, the thing we should really be asking the saintly persons for is to ask for that benediction, having asked which, will be fully satisfied. And that's only spiritual. You know, Bali thought he could give that kind of benediction to Vamandev. He says to Vamandev, you should ask for that thing. Don't ask for just three steps of land. He said, you should ask for that benediction. For me, I own the universe. Having gotten which, you'll never have to ask anyone for anything else ever. And of course, that attitude of Bali was the reason why Vamandev took everything away, because he thought that he could be God, and he could, although he was a devotee, he had become bewildered, and he thought that he could give that kind of a benediction. But that's what Dhruva Maharaj got from the Lord, and that's of course an interesting story, because in that case he asked for something material and he was given the spiritual. And he said, now that I have the spiritual, he was given both. He said, now that I have the spiritual, it's like I've gotten a diamond, and I realize I was asking for broken pieces of glass. And Dhruva actually regretted that along with the spiritual benediction, he is also getting the material benediction. Lord Vishnu says, okay, you know, you wanted to be the head honcho in the universe, so you're going to get to be that too. And then he was simply lamenting. So we should understand that by my own strength, by my own power, by my own intelligence, by my own determination, I cannot force my way into the kingdom of God. I can't even force my way into good karma. What to speak of force my way into the kingdom of God? And what I'm looking for is a loving relationship with a person. I'm not looking for some kind of mechanical liberation. And although my following strictly is important, it's important primarily as a means of showing my sincerity, not that it's like some kind of a code to unlock a door or some money put into a vending machine. It's not operating on that platform. And that I really do need blessings. and to get blessings from the saintly persons, I have to have some concept of who to go to for blessings and what to ask for blessings. So the Prachetas are exemplifying this. The Prachetas are exemplifying going to the right person and asking for the right thing. All right, so I see we already have a question here in the chat from Ramananda. If a person is wicked and cruel, if they do good karma, they will reap their do good results. Yes. How can a wicked person possibly perform good karmic activities? Won't his sinful nature push him into sinful activities? It's a matter of record that criminals will also do good activities. That's well known. Criminals may do good activities thinking that this will nullify their criminal activities. They may have all different kinds of reasons why they do it. Who knows? But people are a mix. Very few people are entirely good or entirely evil. That is very rare. And so even people who are generally evil will sometimes do good works. I sometimes bring up the fact that in the fifth canto, there's the subterranean heavenly planets. So there's heavenly planets for pious atheists, moral atheists. If you don't like God and you don't like religion and you don't like religious people and you don't want to be around them, but you've been a very pious person your whole life. So you also have a heaven where you don't even see the sunshine. You're not even reminded that there's a creator and there's no religious people there. There's also other atheists. And, you know, you get to enjoy there till the chakra comes and the Sudarshan chakra finishes it. But there is a heaven for atheists. And we see that wicked people do good things, and then the results are mixed. They enjoy the results of their good things, and they suffer the results of their bad things. And then you're saying, why does Brahma give benedictions to wicked people? He got in trouble for it. But, I mean, don't we ever do anything nice for people that we probably shouldn't do something nice for? It's natural. It's natural that if someone comes to us with humility or if someone, you know, that we may want to help them out even though they may not be deserving of it. And it's a good thing, actually, that the demigods and the saintly persons are like this, because all of us are wicked as well. You know, we become outraged when other wicked people are shown mercy without realizing that we are also wicked. Now, we may not have the kind of wickedness that they have, but we all have selfishness. And if we don't get mercy, we're in a lot of trouble. Anybody else have a question?
Why does Krishna often not fulfill the desire of a devotee, but at least from their standpoint or our standpoint, seems like something that would help them in their devotional service? For example, a woman who's lonely and she wants a husband to serve and to work together in their spiritual life, more often, even though they pray to Krishna, that never comes. Or a devotee who's living a very destitute life, they're very Spartan, and they're just praying to Krishna. Krishna, I can't even pay my bills. I can't get by. Would you please help me out a little bit here? But often that doesn't happen, and sometimes we see devotees lose faith, or devotees ill. They have cancer, and they pray to Krishna, can you fix this so I can go on serving? But often that doesn't happen. What are your thoughts on that?
Maybe that Krishna is smarter than we are? You know, I think this is just like, I really think it's just exactly like little children. We're like very, very little children in our intelligence and understanding. Come on, we're just humans in Kali Yuga. I mean, a human being in Kali Yuga is, we're on the lowest of the middle planets. Our ability to understand things is extremely small. I mean, we really just don't understand things. It's like I regularly take prasadam with my granddaughter and her family, and she's got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. and they regularly want to eat their dessert before they finish their food. And they can't understand why their parents don't allow them to do that. They just don't get it. To them, it's very cruel. And, you know, sometimes they'll have a meltdown about it. That, you know, I don't want to eat my vegetables. Why are you making me eat my vegetables? This is cruel. Or, you know, why do you make me put away my toys? Or why do you make me go to bed? Why don't you buy me all the toys that I want? You know, and the child really doesn't understand. Why do I have to do my homework? Why do I have to go to school? You know, they really, really don't understand. But the parent has a greater vision than the child. And, you know, it's fascinating to me that parents have to, you know, cajole and bribe and sometimes force their children to eat and sleep and bathe. Actually, I was just reading this in the Bhagavatam with Krishna, how Mother Yasoda has, you know, first Rohini goes to call back Krishna and Balaram, and then Mother Yasoda goes and says, you know, you've been playing all day. You're dirty. You need to take a bath. You need to eat something. And Krishna doesn't want to come. You know, and then he starts to come, and the other boys call him back and say, you know, if you go home, we won't play with you tomorrow. So this is, but, you know, we're very much like children. And our vision of what's good for us and what we need is so limited. So what makes perfect sense to us, you know, is from such a tiny perspective. From our perspective, the Lord's behavior is inscrutable, and the Lord's behavior is disturbing. You know, we just don't get it. You know, why don't you give me this thing, this facility, this whatever? It would help me in my service. It would help me in my life. And Krishna's like, well, actually, it wouldn't. It would actually hurt you. And it's not good for you to have this. You know, we could say in a general way, you know, that if you have money, it's a lot easier to do bhakti because you just don't have to worry about money. Also, we don't know what people did in their last life. Maybe in their last life that person was very, very rich and misused their money and their wealth bewildered them. You know, we just don't know why it is that a person in this life, I mean, talking about a husband, I know of a particular instance where a devotee was born with a medical condition where, and my sister had the same medical condition also, where the person never matures, never sexually matures, they remain as a child. And the only way that they can mature is through artificially giving them hormones and stuff, but generally such people are infertile. They generally remain very short. They never gain adult height, and they're generally infertile. So my sister did get married, but this devotee that I know also who has this condition has never married. And at a certain point, the devotee really wanted to marry, but I suppose it's still possible, but it becomes more and more unlikely as the years go by. And when this person was very young, Srila Prabhupada made a statement to this person's parents that your child was a great yogi in a previous life. And the parents started laughing.
You broke up for a minute.
Okay, Prabhupada said to them, it was a great yogi in a previous life.
Yogi.
And the parents started laughing, and Prabhupada got annoyed and said, no, this is not a joke. I am being very serious. So, you know, in the previous life, maybe this person eschewed all forms of relationship, and maybe they hated the fact that they were a sexual being. Maybe they had a strong aversion, which was actually an impediment for them. And so that desire carried over into the next life, where they were in a position where they were physically impeded. But in this life, they were actually lamenting And they got to see that that attitude was artificial. And that that wasn't the right way to be. You know, we don't know the whole backstory here. We're not seeing what went on in previous lives. We're not seeing what the person's inner struggles are or what's good for that particular individual. We just can't see it. We don't even know really what's good for ourselves. And again, I'm sure we've all had an experience where something happened to us that we thought would be very good and it turned out not to be, or something happened to us that we thought would be very bad and it turned out not to be. You know, I had an experience in the Hare Krishna movement that I thought would be devastating for my spiritual life. And 15 years later, I could see that it had been a great blessing. And I was like, wow, at the time, I thought that it was terrible. But after 15 years, I saw that had that not happened, that would have been terrible. That Krishna had saved me and my family from a very, very bad situation. Although that wasn't apparent at the time. I'm personally convinced, absolutely, completely convinced, especially by that incident, that everything that happens to us in bhakti is loving. And some of this anyone who's in the process of bhakti, Krishna is taking personal care and it's all loving. And if it's not apparent to us at the time, it will be apparent to us eventually. Some of it will be apparent to us a little later in this life, and some of it is not going to be apparent to us until we're out of this body. And we see the whole scope of our lives, and then we see everything was loving. Everything was a blessing. Is that all right?
Great answer. Thank you so much. Yeah, that was really good. But of course, your opener, it's hard to even beat your opener. Well, maybe Krishna's just a little smarter than us.
Yeah, just a little bit.
That's great.
Just a little bit. And so our assessment of good and bad is very flawed. You know, it's really very flawed. Also, very frankly, a lot of the difficulty that we go through is due to some desire, some improper desire on our part in this life or a previous life. Like that yogi. You know, that we don't really know what to desire. And so sometimes Krishna will give us things that, you know, when we get them, we're like, I don't want this. And this is what happened with Dhruva. That was the opposite. It was apparently a opulence. But then Dhruva said, I don't want this. This is actually a problem for me. And the Lord said, sorry, you asked for it. And so people may also ask for positions of renunciation that are not really proper for them. You know, Rupa Goswami cautions that jnana and vairagya are not qualifications for bhakti. They're results of bhakti, but they're not qualifications for bhakti. And we've seen devotees artificially take up all kinds of renunciation, feeling it will help them in their bhakti, but it doesn't. And so Krishna may say, okay, you know, if that's what you want, I'll put you in a situation where renunciation is forced on you. And then the person realizes, wait a minute, that's not the thing. The thing is love. The thing is not, you know, poverty and disease. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Thank you so much.
Vidag Damodava, yes, and then I need to go.
Okay. There's a setup to this, and then I really like your class. Dandavats, Rama.
Dandavats, you.
It's even the Karmakanda system is based on the acceptance of higher powers and controllers.
Correct.
It's a personal universe.
Yes.
So some years ago, there was a best-selling book called The Secret, and I was interested in this. I mean, some devotees get caught up in this, and it started some seminars and became popular, and their idea was similar to Karma Mimamsa, a godless universe. So their proposal was that if you know the laws of the universe, then you can manipulate them, become wealthy, because the universe has to do with the result.
Correct.
So, but this leads to a question. closer to home. So some devotees, they might think that by following a formula such as 16 rounds and 4 regs, Srila Prabhupada and Krishna have to be pleased with me no matter how I behave towards others. But isn't Krishna a living conception? And we have to be aware in real time what we are doing is moving us towards him or away from him.
Correct, absolutely. And, you know, if one says, well, I'm just going to, you know, bribe the pure devotees and I'm not going to chant my rounds and follow the principles, that's not going to work most likely. You know, you're probably not going to do that. It's not going to be effective. At the same time, you can't just say, well, I'm following everything, you have to give me love. I mean, the analogy that I always give for this is, you know, suppose a man has cheated on his wife. You know, he's had whatever, 10 different girlfriends he's cheated on his wife with. And then he comes back to his wife and he says, please, because this is what we've done. We've turned our back to Krishna and we've had affairs with Maya in her different forms. And then the man comes back to his wife and says, please take me back. So the wife may be, let's say that she actually loves her husband and she wants a relationship with him. She might initially be very happy and say, you know, I'm so glad you've come back. And then she may give him things to do to show his sincerity. She may say, you know, okay, I want you to do this and this and this and this and this. But the man cannot then come to her and say, okay, I've done everything you want. Now you have to let me back into your life. Then he's missing the whole point. You know, it's not like if the wife gives him a checklist and say, if you do these things, I'll know you're sincere about saving our marriage. And then he comes back and says, well, I've checked off everything on the list. You're required to open the door and let me come back into the house. Then she'll say, sorry, you've lost the thread. You've missed the boat. You don't understand what this is about. This is about reestablishing a relationship of trust. You know, or if you've offended your wife and so you come home with roses and a diamond bracelet, but you're not actually sorry. You know, well, and then she'll say, what, do you think I'm a prostitute? You can just buy me? So we have to remember that although we certainly should be checking off the things on the checklist, that what we're talking about is loving relationships. And therefore, we're dependent on mercy. And to the extent that we're merciful to others, Krishna will be merciful to us. You know, it's ridiculous if I'm not merciful to others, and then I say, Krishna, please be merciful to me. It's like the story Jesus tells of the debtor, where the judge excused his debts, and he didn't excuse the debts others owed him, and then the judge said, okay, then I won't excuse you either. And Lord Kapiladeva, who says, you know, if we're not treating other living entities nicely, then it's like we're making offerings into ashes. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly we should follow the procedures given to us by Srila Prabhupada, given to us by Rupa Goswami. We should definitely do that, but it's not a mechanical process. And it's something, it's about relationships, and it's about humility, and it's... Ultimately, we are dependent on mercy and blessings, which we cannot exactly earn. We should never have the mood that I've earned this.
Yeah, you can't demand something and be humble at the same time.
No, thank you, thank you, thank you. That was very well put. Those are mutually incompatible. As soon as you're demanding something, that's indicative of pride, and the pride is indicative that one has no conception of why we're in material life in the first place. It's the antithesis of what we need to do. So, yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you for this opportunity. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.